Marilyn Priddy, you're running in a rather unconventional way. You're a registered Democrat, but running as an unaffiliated candidate due to the point at which you decided to run. Can you explain what happened and why you decided to jump into this race late?
Sure, thank you. I was happily retired, and I joined an environmental group and started going to the Board of Commissioners meetings. And I understood the Board of Commissioners had a resolution to support offshore drilling and seismic blasting, which I don't agree with. And the environmental group and a lot of other residents in the county convinced the commissioners to come back to a neutral position where they wouldn't take a stance one way or the other on those issues. But in the February meeting, that's what happened. And in the March meeting, we fully expected that the resolution would be to oppose both offshore drilling and seismic blasting because we'd presented resolutions from 15 of the 19 communities in Brunswick County that said this is what the residents want. But instead, even though the chambers were full, the commissioners decided to take the issue off the table, which was very disappointing. So I didn't really leave that meeting with the intention to run. In fact, I never considered running. But we found out that because I lived in District 2, I would be eligible to run for the seat that was unopposed, which is Marty Cook's seat. And he was the most vocal of the pro-drilling. So we figured, you know, let's try. It's not really fair to have somebody be rewarded for that behavior with no contest. So I found out we could get my name on we could start the petition process. And we went to the Board of Elections. And this was the week after the March for Our Lives. So I had gone up to Wilmington and watched those kids, and they were like 14, 15, 16, just bravely stand in front of hundreds and hundreds of people. And I thought, well, I can at least try.
The March for Our Lives. That was a protest, a demonstration after the Parkland shooting.
A request for more common sense gun laws.
Now, this petition process became controversial. There were complaints to the County Board of Elections that volunteers were asking for signatures against offshore drilling, not to put you on the ballot. And the county elections director said, once somebody signed a petition, we can't remove their name. So do you feel like you're going into this race from a completely fair kind of point of view? What happened there? What do you have to say about that?
I absolutely think it was fair. I know many, not all, of the people that had my petition. There were hundreds of people with those petitions, and I couldn't be with every one of them. But I know the people that started the conversation, perhaps, with, do you oppose offshore drilling? Well, if you do, here's a candidate. We can get her name on the ballot. Most people I know just started out, we'd like to get this person's name on the ballot. So I think that's absolutely fair. And the unaffiliated part of it, because I'm on the ballot now as unaffiliated, that's just part of that process. And not, in fact, I was as surprised as others that I would show up as unaffiliated.
Aside from offshore energy exploration, and actually, before I ask you that, I need to ask about the terminology you're using. You're saying seismic blasting, and it's often referred to as seismic testing. Why that word choice?
Well, it's just so harmful to the marine life. The whales, any mammal, and other sea life, that even the small sea life that we don't even think about very much, the sound waves really damage their ability to, especially with the mammals, to navigate. So if a whale has a calf and that blasting, it disrupts it, they can't even keep track of their calves. And there's been so many washed up ashore with bleeding ear drums and damages that we know it's harmful. In fact, when they start it, they harass them out of the area because they know it's going to be harmful. But of course, they can't get them all out, and it's going to go on for months and months. So we call it blasting because it is a sound blast underwater.
So aside from that issue, are there other issues that you're passionate about?
I am. it's hard to make a list, but starting with poverty in the county, especially among children, we have a fairly high poverty rate that people don't know about. A lot of folks, you know, like we did, we moved in. We didn't move to a gated community, but we moved to a community where if you just go in and out of that community, you won't see this poverty that exists in the county. And there are people that I know that, you know, are neighbors with folks that they have to share a car battery for three cars. They don't have transportation to even get to work reliably.
Do you know those people? How did you cross paths with those people? And it's true, Brunswick County has a higher poverty rate than the country's rate of poverty.
Right.
And yet Brunswick County is, I think, a tier three. It's considered one of the wealthier counties.
Right. There's a big diversity in the county.
So how do you know about that? Other than looking at Census Bureau data, how did you cross paths with those people?
Talking to people. This petition process, it was wonderful in that when we got those 5,113 signatures, those were conversations with voters. So the more people that you talk to, the more you can learn about the county and the situations. I'm also very interested in getting some evidence-based treatment centers for those folks that are suffering from the opioid addiction. There's so many factors that impinge on that. Transportation is one. We just mentioned people don't have access to reliable transportation. So if they present themselves to the sheriff's department and they say, I'm an addict, I need help, they're willing to help them. They're not going to arrest them and put them in jail. But they have to have transportation to get back and forth to their treatment, assuming they can find treatment in Brunswick County. So it's there are many factors that impinge, but that's one we really need to get a hold of.
When you say transportation, and of course we know Brunswick County is the fastest growing county in the state, which is another reason that transportation is a big issue for planners. But what does that look like if you're planning for this huge influx of people and you're also planning for people who don't have access to their own transportation? What's the answer?
Well, I think there are, you know, there's efforts to look for grant money, of course, for public transportation. There is sort of minimal transportation available through the Brunswick Transit Authority where you can call 2 days ahead and get the bus to come and get you to take you to like a doctor's appointment. But that doesn't run on the weekends. It doesn't run on in the evenings. So those people that depend on that, they become a little bit isolated. So it would be, I think, really beneficial to expand that. Maybe have some routes that go up and back and forth to the Novant Hospital area where all the doctor's offices are. Those kinds of, it's a long-term process, and I don't have all the answers, but I'd like to see some work in this area.
You're running against Marty Cook, who was appointed in April 2008. He's been reelected twice.
Right.
He's served for 10 years, more than 10 years, other than his position on offshore oil and gas. What do you think he's not doing that you would be? What's your criticism of Marty Cook?
Well, I think the criticism that got me into the race is that they weren't listening. Now, it wasn't a unanimous vote. It was 4-1. But the very fact that they had all these people in the room, and in addition to that decision about tabling the discussion on offshore drilling, the same evening there were a number of animal rights advocates in the room that wanted to speak. And the public comment period is 30 minutes. They could have extended it. They have the authority to extend that comment period and let everybody but it was mostly taken up by the offshore drilling opposers. So the animal rights and welfare group, they didn't, I think maybe two people got to speak. And they were after the county adopting a more humane tethering rule like they did up in Leland. And at the end of it, they adopted this rule, this tethering rule that, if I understand it correctly, if you call your dog a hunting dog, you can tie him up or tie her up for almost its entire lifetime, which we think is cruel. And that was just another, there were two examples that very night about they're not listening to the people that they represent.
Now, let's talk about what Brunswick County looks like from a political affiliation standpoint.
Okay.
It's a very red county. You are a registered Democrat. you are running as unaffiliated only because of a technicality and when you got into the race. Do you think that someone like you really has a shot? And is it possible that Marty Cook is actually representing the majority there?
Well, there are more Republicans than Democrats in Brunswick County, but there's a huge number of unaffiliated voters that haven't declared which party. And many of these people, when we talk to them with the petition, they want to know about the issues. They want to know about the candidates. And they told us over and over again, they don't vote party line. They will look at the candidates. So I do think I have a chance. And I think there's a lot of energy out there this year because of different things that have happened at the state and national level.
At the state and national level, we've become so polarized. It's brought up in almost every political discussion. And during the last couple of elections, there are many issues on which you can so easily identify a person's R or D status based on how they answer an issues question. Is that true with you? Are there any issues on which you think it might be hard for someone to tell your political affiliation based on your answer to an issues question? Show us that you're a critical thinker, an independent thinker.
Well, I think this recovery process from Florence, this is going to be a good test of there are so many nonprofit church groups partnering now with government agencies all over the county, the towns. I'm really not trying to deflect from the question, but I'm really proud to be a resident of Brunswick County right now. There's been such an outpouring. We've been working with the Brunswick Family Assistance Group passing out food. And this cannot be a polarizing issue. We all need to work together to recover from this disaster, and we need to learn from it because it's not going to be the last storm that we, that occurs in our communities. And I think if we can't afford, and I haven't seen that kind of division in the recovery, and I hope that continues. And I don't see why it shouldn't continue on issues like transportation and access to health care. There shouldn't be this division when it affects people's quality of life. We have to get past that.
You, on your website, propose, quote, exploring new revenue streams that will generate income for specific county operations, for example, animal control and solid waste management, without raising taxes on all residents. What do you mean by that? How would you create a new revenue stream for animal control?
Well, I was surprised. We moved from Michigan. We had a dog that was 17, but he passed away before we moved down here. But every community we've ever lived in, and we moved around quite a bit for our jobs, we had to go to the county with our rabies certification, get a dog license. And the fees aren't very high. They're maybe $10 or $12 or $15. And it gives the county a database of where the animals are in case there's a health issue. It provides some revenue that would support, if not fully support, but make a big pot of money that they could be used to spay and neuter animals. So there'd be less and less animals in the shelter. So that's just one example. It's pretty common. I was really surprised to find out that there's no licensing requirement in our county. If you can't afford a $10 license, you probably shouldn't have the dog or cat anyway.
How could solid waste management generate a new revenue stream in the county?
Bottle deposits would be a good revenue, and it's not a county issue. It has to be done statewide. But we've lived in states where you buy a beverage, you pay 10 cents per container, and they opposed it at first. The grocery stores were the main sites where you take back your containers, and they developed these really cool machines where you just put the container in the machine, it spits out a piece of paper, you go in and redeem the cash value. And it keeps the aluminum cans and the plastic bottles, which we've got so many more plastic bottles in use right now because of our water quality issues, it keeps them out of our landfill. It lengthens the life of the landfill, which is very expensive, to either start a new landfill or ship all of this waste somewhere else. It's a huge cost. So we could, but again, it's a state issue. And I talked to Ms. Bozeman that runs the solid waste recycling department in Brunswick County. She said there's no appetite right now at the state for that, but we could change that. With this election, we could elect people that are more interested in these kind of environmental issues because they also affect the economy. It's not just the environment. It's costs that we pay for to get this trash shipped away when it could be reused.
You alluded to water treatment issues. Are you satisfied now that Brunswick County is moving towards a system that will protect its citizens from emerging contaminants?
Yeah, I was at the commissioner's meeting when they voted to approve that $99 million expenditure for the RO plant reverse osmosis. I was really pleased that they had made that decision. With it didn't take that long, I think, you know, once they decided to do it, and then at the meeting yesterday, I was there, and they were talking about the discharge permit, and you know, they're waiting on the state for that. But it can move along. It's a modular, if I understand it right. It's a modular units that go in. So once the discharge permit is approved and the mechanics, it won't take that long. What I would like to see is, I know that there's a suit against Chemours. I'd like to see them pursue damages, not just the cost of this plant, because every $5 increase on everybody's water bill, that's $5 that could be spent on other, you know, shoes, food, restaurants. It's money that's going, that could be spent elsewhere. I think we need to retrieve that.
You spent more than 30 years working in industrial hygiene. What does that mean? Tell us about your career.
Oh, I had a great job. I loved my job. I sort of fell into it. I was working at a county health department, and a public health nurse told me, hey, you could, I had a biology degree, wasn't making any money at all as a restaurant inspector. So she told me that there was a civil service exam back then. You could take an exam, and about a year later, and we had already moved, and I was working in a drugstore, I think. The Department of Labor in Cincinnati called and said, hey, you want to come down and get trained as a safety and health professional? I said, we were married, at my husband and I had been married about 46 years, so we said, yeah, why not? So we moved down to Cincinnati, and it was like a two-year training program. Industrial hygiene is a field where you go out and you evaluate potential exposures that employees would have. So any kind of workplace you can imagine, we get into. And, you know, mines, quarries, foundries, mills, schools, hospitals, offices, all kinds of industries and work sites. We evaluate, you know, what the potential exposures were by measuring and then comparing to existing standards. So I got laid off from OSHA when Reagan got elected. They got rid of the new compliance people. So I got a real similar job with the state of Ohio, which was even better because we were invited into the workplaces at that job. It was part of the workers' comp fund. If you paid into workers' comp, you could get our services for no extra cost. So there I spent, I think, about 14 years altogether. And that was great. And then eventually we moved again, and I got a similar job for a consulting group.
What do you think that experience gave you towards, if you wound up beating Marty Cook in this race, how would that experience serve you as a county commissioner?
To do the job that I held, and it include all kinds of jobs, just not evaluations, but audits, inspections, fatality investigations, you had to go in with your ears wide open. You had to listen to people, understand the process. You can't go in with a preconceived notion of what's going to work. You have to understand what that job entails and what they're doing, and they'll tell you, you know, the people on the floor tell you how the job works, not the people in the offices. So you go out and observe and talk to people and then work with others to come up with some practical solutions. So I think that's similar to the county. The whole idea is to improve the quality of life for those workers. The idea with the county commissioner is to improve the quality of life for the residents of the county. So I think I'd be good at it.
Do you think that the county gives enough to its public school system in terms of both per pupil spending and teacher supplements?
I looked at the formulas. I think they use a little different system in Brunswick County than they do in New Hanover and another adjacent county. And I didn't have enough information to compare. It looked equivalent, but we should give as much as is possible. I think the state has a lot of control on what teachers are paid, and they're trying to do better, but it's really not enough. I mean, teachers have to get second jobs sometimes to support their families. That's really wrong. We need to, you know, they need to be paid well so they won't go to another state and take that expertise with them.
You could go two ways with that. You could say the county then needs to cough up more for the supplement for teacher pay. You could also say the county commissioners need then to lobby their state legislators to get them more money.
Both. I would agree with both. You need to do whatever's doable to get teachers and other people in the education system.
And so if it came out of the county budget, where would it come from?
I don't know. We would have to look for it. I mean, there's ways to, you'd have to work with the county manager who has she's got really focused on how that budget works, and you would have to talk about it.
And if you're talking about state legislators, do you have relationships with any of the state legislators?
Only the candidates. I've talked to Frank Eiler by text and phone call, maybe once in person. I know some of the candidates running for the state offices.
How do you build relationships with the people who are in office?
Talking and listening, mostly listening, more listening than talking. But, you know, that's what I did for my career. And I think it's the most important thing you do is listen.
Let's circle back to infrastructure, because you mentioned infrastructure as an issue with hidden costs. And going back to the idea that Brunswick County is growing so rapidly, so much planning is important. Do you think the commissioners are doing a good job of planning? What grade would you give them? And which infrastructure costs are you concerned about that aren't being addressed?
Well, I think they're doing a good job with the water and sewer expansions, because they've got a long-range plan, and they're implementing it from what I can see. The highways, those are, you know, it's the state highway department that is involved, and I think there's more than one group. There's like a rural transportation group and the Myrtle Beach Metropolitan Planning Group, and then the one up this area. So there has to be a lot of communication. And I do know what from reading the Brunswick Vision report that the commissioners paid for a couple years ago, I think they started it, and it's published on the website. They moved to Brunswick County because it's quieter, it's less congested, and we need to protect that because that's one of our assets. So it's a huge balancing act between getting people, you know, to the jobs, getting the tourists back and forth to the beaches. It's quite a puzzle to work out, but I think we need to acknowledge it. When I was working as an industrial hygienist, the first thing you have to do is recognize there's an issue. So we have to recognize this as an issue, and I think most people do. But the extent of it, I'm not sure they recognize, you know, that this is an asset that we need to protect and not overdevelop the county.
Marilyn Priddy, is there anything else that we haven't talked about that you think is a really important element of who you are and what you would bring to county leadership?
I'm new to this. I've never run for office before. And I was really looking forward to the League of Women Voters candidate forums. They had one scheduled just for county candidates like myself. And this is unprecedented, but the Republican candidates in the county turned down the League's invitation. It's never happened before. The League of Women Voters has been in existence for almost 100 years. They'll be celebrating, I think, the 100-year anniversary in 2020. And I was really looking forward to this because I am new. People don't know much about me. I didn't grow up in Brunswick County. And it's a good opportunity from a nonpartisan, experienced group to answer questions. And I really don't understand why the opposition declined the invitations. They were asked over and over again. And I think it's I'm going to say I think it's one of two things. It's either arrogance or they don't want to face the voters. And either one is not a good answer to why they decline those invitations.
What if I told you that some would argue that they consider the League of Women Voters now partisan and taking positions that align with Democrats?
The League is very interested in getting people to vote. That's their mission, getting people out to vote. And they also educate voters on the issues. So if somebody looks at their education material and say, you know, for example, their position on photo IDs for voters, and it's not the same position that the Republicans take, that's not being partisan. The League is just educating voters on this issue. So I think it's actually untruthful to call the League partisan, because they take a lot of time trying to become nonpartisan, you know, stay nonpartisan.
Marilyn Priddy, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with our listeners today.
Thank you, Rachel, for all you do.